ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. Today, I'm interviewing Andrew Hofner, the creator of Houseworld, one of New York City's most prominent immersive environments. It has been featured in Vice, The New York Times, Pitchfork, Gawker, Forbes, and American Theater Magazine. We're going to be talking about how Andrew developed this innovative form of new media, what the emergence of immersive theater means for broader media world, and much more. Andrew, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be talking to you.
Fantastic. So first, let's start by you giving me and the audience just the Cliff Notes version of your story. How did you end up doing what you're doing now?
Houseworld was a performance that I developed in my house appropriately. And I developed it for my friends, something by my friends, for my friends in a house. And people enjoyed it. People got more and more excited about it. So we started doing more and more, and until it became a public performance that 1,100 people attended last year. And now we continue to expand our the sorts of immersive performances that we create, and Houseworld and otherwise.
To back up just a little bit for people who may not be familiar with exactly what Houseworld is, can you just explain a little bit what it is?
Sure. Houseworld is an experience where one by one, 30 guests enter an historic mansion and step into a dream world. The guests start to explore these different surreal rooms and meet strange characters that represent different faces of the psyche. So through that exploration of the house, the guest explores the self.
If a guest were to come every day, would they have a different experience? Are they also interacting with the other guests, or is it purely interacting with the players within the house?
The guests are interacting with the other guests, and people have attended Houseworld multiple times, and the experience can be drastically different.
Fascinating. So you came up with this idea originally for your friends and then pushed it out and beyond. Would you say that you were driven to this by a certain theme? What made you come up with the idea?
The main inspiration for this was that I happened to be living on the property of Flatbush Reformed Church during 2013 through 2015. They were doing an experiment, seeing if they wanted to have tenants in their parsonage, which is the house where the pastor used to live. And towards the end of 2014, they started to decide, I don't think we really want tenants here. And so there was this process of, I was living in this mansion built in the 1860s, and there started to be very few of us there. It started to be me and two other tenants. And as I would go through this house, which I had been in love with for the since moving in, I started to get more and more ideas of, what if I made this weird thing happen in here and this weird thing happen in this room, and if I invited my friends over to walk into all these rooms and see these strange happenings. And the ideas kept piling on until it reached a breaking point, and we did it.
Why do you think people respond so positively to this really unique, it's really so creative and so different. And you could say, well, it was designed, born of your psyche for an audience, really a very niche, special audience of your friends. Why do you think that it had resonance with a larger audience?
People are craving a few different things. I think that as media becomes more and more available, like any album, any music album, any movie, they're all available with a click, a lot of times for free. And so as buying a record or buying a movie has become more and more accessible, people have are becoming more and more interested in these experiences where you go to a location and something happens in real time all around you that can only happen by you being there. So I think that's one part of what people are getting out of this. I think another part is that humans love to play and love to pretend in the way that we all did when we were children. And I think maybe there was this false impression that it's something we grow less and less interested as we become adults, but maybe that's not true. Maybe we've just had to discard play and pretend in order to survive and in order to, you know, have careers or hunt and gather or whatever we needed to do. But now we've reached a point where we're the social constraints are such, and we have enough time to be able to say, maybe adults can play, maybe adults can pretend. And I think when people are giving that a try again these days, it feels really good.
Absolutely. So what would you say, though, has been a challenge to you? Like, in putting this together, what would you say? I mean, it really is different. And when you create new forms, people are, you know, change is uncomfortable for people. As you've moved forward and tried to push the immersive experience concept forward, what have been some of the roadblocks or challenges that you've encountered?
Sure. One roadblock is just it's expensive. The resources that it requires can be intimidating and challenging. As my day job, I still play church music at churches, and I teach piano lessons. So for me, sometimes it's been going and playing another service or going and teaching another lesson in order to buy this prop or this piece of set design, you know? And when you're trying to create these worlds, Houseworld had a paid cast of 21 performers, and there were 25 rooms. So when you're trying to create these immense worlds that an audience member can spend a couple hours in, it can become expensive, and that's one big challenge.
Did you feel that you were able to price the admission ticket? Was there, you know, that's one of the things that often in more traditional media, that's the, you know, how do you price the subscription or the thing in order to pay for the quality that somebody wants to expect? You want a really good show, you don't want commercials, you're gonna have to pay for it. So you want a really amazing immersive experience, you wanna go into somebody's psyche in a mansion. Are people ponying up the money that they ought to have that experience?
It's difficult to price. So there is a pretty, a sizable crowd of what some people might call immersive theater junkies that are ready to that are accustomed to paying, you know, $50 or $75 or $100 or $150 or more for these sorts of experiences, and those people are not only in New York, but they're all over the U.S. They're in other countries, and I did get the sense when we presented Houseworld in the fall that those people were coming in from all corners to buy the those tickets and support the show. And then there were other moments where I felt like some people didn't want to pay, you know, $50 to see a show. The average price that a Houseworld ticket went for last fall was $50. And there were some times when people came and, you know, maybe felt like they wanted more for their money. So it's a tricky realm. And, you know, so far, House World has lost money. You know, I've lost a significant chunk of money, feeding this dream that I love to work on and that I'm happy to spend money on. But it's difficult for sure.
Well, so would you classify, it's interesting when one thinks about classifying things, like, is it performance art? Is it theater? Is it a different kind of theater? What one's expectations are in terms of audience, you know, resource, how much they're contributing. You know, if you think about, let's say, going what the price of a ticket for Hamilton is, mm-hmm. Versus what the ticket price is and what the gougy, StubHub price becomes. And then also if you're buying a painting or you're going to a performance art show and the grants that are available and the things like that, I mean, what you're doing is really unique. How do you define it? How do other people define it? And then that's sort of that triggers pricing often. Currently, how are you defining it for yourself? Is it its own unique kind of artistry, or is it a blend of other disciplines? What would you say?
Yeah, when I think about it to myself, or when I'm talking about it with my collaborators, I think of it as multidisciplinary. But when I present it to the public, I'm most inclined to use the term immersive theater, just because I think it's the best way to let the fans of this form know, like, you're looking for more of that. This is one of the things that's more of that. You're looking for more of an experience like Sleep No More, an experience like Then She Fell. This is one of those. But to me, sometimes when I collaborate with different people who work in the theater, or maybe when just the boundaries of the shows, when we start to cross-pollinate with different actual theaters or theater organizations, I start to notice, in some ways this isn't exactly a theater show. And sometimes I think there's some awkward things don't quite fit because we're using that term immersive theater, but it's, in some ways, it's just not that. It's not like a play. It's not like what Hamilton is.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think that's one of the things that I'm interested in, is if I'm working in more traditional media, which is undergoing a lot of change and needs to have engagement with audience, the people who participate in immersive theater, they are engaged like nothing else. They're super engaged, turbo engaged. But it's a very unique experience. And so you kind of think, well, theater is sort of even more traditional than television. I mean, right? You get
sure
uber traditional. So this is how you can reinvent and push theater. Like, how could this idea be pushed and blown out to other mediums? Or is it impossible? Is this sort of the way this one worked? This is how this goes.
How might other media be influenced by immersive theater?
Yes.
Well, I think that I guess this is usually part of the transmedia discussion of people like organic. I think that people like when media sort of spreads its organic tentacles out into the real world. And so if I'm going to watch a movie, but I can also go to a location and experience some themed experience, maybe like how Ghostbusters is coming out and there's a Ghostbusters virtual reality thing opening in Times Square. That demonstrates a way that entertainment's becoming immersive.
Or Improv Everywhere then has people playing ghosts in the New York Public Library reading room. But then you're not participant as much. You're still an observer. I mean, I think one of the things that's very interesting is that you have a real interaction of the actors in each of your rooms. Like in the in-house world, you had an actor in a room and they were prepared to encounter the guests who, and they were prepared to interact with them. And that's actually what people were doing. Whereas I suppose some of these other things, it's still a somewhat static, you experience it, but still you're somewhat, as a viewer, as a participant, you're more passive. Whereas in this, you're very active. And there's an interaction between you and the actor, a very direct one-on-one personalized experience.
Yeah, I think it's a big challenge. I think that creators are interested in preserving the quality of their brand. And so, you know, there's one side of me that might think, well, I don't want there to be a really bad joke that happens in Houseworld, and I don't want one audience member to think, man, that joke was bad, and now every time I think of Houseworld, I'm going to think of this bad joke in this scene this actor tried to deliver but couldn't land. And a designer might say, well, I'm going to make a beginning and end to the scene so that the scene is at a, you know, it never goes below a certain level of quality no matter what. And I think that with Houseworld, we really have, we stick out our neck in a certain way of allowing for maybe certain scenes to improvisationally miss their mark, or be, you know, people run out of words, or people make a bad joke or something, for the sake of when creating a situation where there's going to be more improvisational good created, and that's going to be so valuable that it overshadows the near misses or the misses that happen.
Right. Was it difficult for you to give up control? Because you really have to surrender, in a way, to the night, to how it's going to unfold, to your visitors, to your guests. You know, you have a bunch of stick-in-the-mud guests. Maybe it's not going to be as great of an experience. Or you have somebody who's just, you know, over the top and maybe hijacks the experience.
Yeah, all of, both of those things happened to certain degrees. I can think of examples of both of those kind of nights. And also a lot of nights when we struck a great balance, or, you know, where the sum was better than its parts. And it actually, it wasn't difficult to let go of control. I used to be kind of a control freak when I was a singer-songwriter and I wrote, you know, rock songs. And when I instructed my band, I'd be pretty meticulous about what everybody was playing. But with Houseworld, there was just, the only option was either the show doesn't happen, or the show happens, but there's a lot of wildness to it. There's a lot that I can't control. And so I always just chose the show happens, and there's a lot of wild cards. And it's been very fruitful. It's been a fruitful choice that I've had to make.
Did you feel that your actors, were they collaborators in terms of what the theme of each room, or were you really the creative vision for each room?
The rooms range, and some rooms have a script that the actors follow, you know, that I've written for them. And some rooms has been a 50-50. Some rooms organically over time have become more the actor's domain. And there have been some rooms where, like, I've never seen what goes on. Like, for example, there was a puppet show room in one of the early incarnations of Houseworld, and I never got to see that puppet show. But I love the puppeteer's work, and I let them run that room.
Oh, interesting.
And so, and I think that in every case, the rooms start to really thrive when they're showcasing what those performers and what those personalities do best, who they are naturally. And so the rooms have taken on those qualities as the show goes along.
Through the process of putting this together, have you noticed change so that, just in terms of audiences' acceptance and understanding of the medium, and therefore their expectations are shifting? I mean, is the ground shifting as you're doing it, or is the environment somewhat static and you're creating this experience, but the world in which you're operating and selling and creating it is somewhat stable?
So far it feels stable. A lot of companies are trying their hand at immersive theater Well, some companies are. And it, in some ways, it's unfolding slowly. Like, in some ways, it feels kind of like 20 or 30 major immersive performances come up in New York every year, or maybe just like one or two major ones each month or less. And so the form develops slowly. And I think people, the creators are learning at a slow speed. The audiences are learning what it is at a slow speed. It seems stable, and it seems like it's taking some time for everybody to figure out how to do this.
Is this still, is immersive theater something that has backers, or is it still very much an artistic creation of each of the creators? I mean, sort of back in the late 80s, I guess, it was sort of like there was Cafe Chino and some of these like glitter theater down on the Lower East Side, things like that, which were very on the fringe and very edgy and very created by the actors for the actors and other members of the community. Is this something that is still really a creator's medium, or are there financial backers who are looking to monetize, create, and support this artistic endeavor?
Well, we have one investor who's invested a relatively small amount in House World. I'm aware of, there's a company called Variety Worldwide that I know played a big part in developing Sleep No More and Queen of the Night. And I think they also developed the casino venue that the Great Comet of 1812 took place in a couple years ago. And so that's one of the major producers of immersive theater. And I know that the Grand Paradise, which happened in Bushwick and is happening now, I know that they collaborated with a real estate developer who, worked with them to secure that building.
Huh.
And so those are a few examples. I know that there's a company called The Speakeasy in San Francisco that has raised around $1 million at this point to stage The Speakeasy this fall. Hmm. And so there are some bigger producers. There's a company called Woodshed Collective, and I know they do some fundraising on their own. I'm not sure how at the scale of production that they're working in, but there's some stuff. But I think then there's also a lot of creators like me who are scrappy artists trying to make something happen on our own and maybe like catches hold somewhere with the producer.
Right. Now, in terms of who is coming to the performances, who is coming as guests? I mean, certainly traditional media, everybody's talking about millennials, we want the millennials. Who are the people who are coming most predominantly to these immersive theater experiences?
Yeah, I'd say men and women in between maybe 25 to 45. Oh, wow. That's probably the center of the audience. And then there are some younger people, 16 and 18 year olds, some people that like we have to make sure don't drink any of the drinks when they're in there. and then there's some older folks as well, people up to like age 70 probably come to House World. And so it's a pretty broad age range, and broad in terms of ethnicity, broad, I think, in terms of in terms of a lot of identities. And maybe sharing one thing in common is that it tends to all be people who can pay at least like $35 for a ticket, and not for a large amount of people, that's too much. But maybe that's one thing the audience has in common, is they can pay at least that much for a night out.
Right. Well, I mean, if you start thinking about even going to the movie theater, two tickets and some popcorn, and very rapidly, your numbers are going up in terms of what a person is spending, or if you're going to a museum or any sort of specialty event, if you're going to a ball game, amusement park entry fee, something like that. If you were to look into the crystal ball for where you see this movement headed, what do you think the future, like if you were to project 5 years from now, what do you think is going to be like? Is it going to be different? Is it going to be about the same? What do you think?
I think that we're going to see more destinations like the McKittrick Hotel popping up. They've created a place that where not only that performance of Sleep No More lives, but also there's all sorts of nightlife options available. You can eat at the restaurant, you can drink at the bar, you can see bands perform at the venue. And I think that's a good place to start as far as how can we mount these performances for the long term and make them available for people as they come through these cities, and also generate the resources that these performances need to stay alive.
Well, that's actually very interesting. Two questions. The first is just to explain a bit more. So in that situation, is the immersive experience the entire, you know, if you go to the bar and get a drink, are you going to have an immersive experience, or are you just in the location where the immersive experience is? Same with, you know, going to see the band. Is that experience pervasive for the entire building, or is it just that while in this building you can do these other things?
Right. Well, it's not when you eat at the restaurant or when you see the concert, it's not always immersive at all or that immersive, but it does have the aesthetic of that show. And so, you know, when I imagine like what sort of bar like might exist in the house world aesthetic where you've entered a dream, what would a surrealist bar be like? What would a surreal restaurant be like? What would the venue be like? And also the taste of the creator comes into play of like, what are the sorts of musicians and performers that would be in orbit around a show like House World? What makes sense to go together? So you could start, or like, what's a party that might happen in the House World complex that isn't the show itself, but has the aesthetic? The public starts to trust this venue as a certain aesthetic and a certain taste. It's a tastemaker, maybe.
Right. Well, it's almost the brand of the experience is pushed into these other realms. I mean, it's interesting. What do you think of, I think it was Banksy did something, a play on Disney World.
Dismal World,
right?
Was it Dismal World or Dismaland or something?
Right. I was wondering, do you think, because I guess that it turned out to be a little too depressing and not too interesting and sort of conceptually fascinating, but perhaps the execution wasn't as well done. Although I'm not 100% aware that, what are you aware of it? Do you have opinions?
Yeah. I was actually in London when that happened and I didn't get to go, but, my girlfriend got to go, and one of my good friends also got to attend, and they both thought it was great. They had a great time.
Oh, so, fantastic.
Yeah. So I think
would Dismal World or Dismal Land, would that, in your book, would that be an immersive experience, or is that something slightly different?
Yes, I would consider that an immersive experience. Now, people went there and they didn't experience a performance that, you know, starts at minute one and ends at two hours. They experienced more of like a space that was kind of activated when the space opened and closed at the end of the day. And I guess, you know, like from the vendors selling the depressing balloons to the people running the depressing rides, everybody was kind of performing But yeah, I would consider that that is absolutely in the conversation, and the fact that Disneyland happened last year, it makes perfect sense. It's feeding this interest that people have of going to special locations, having special experiences that you can talk to, that you can touch, that you can pick up and take to other places.
Right, right. Fascinating. So we talked about where you see the larger industry maybe going. What about for yourself? What's up next for you?
Well, this year we are trying our hands at all sorts of formats. Now that people know about us, there have been different opportunities to work on different locations and make different performances. So, for example, in June, I made an immersive concert at Ars Nova, which is a theater in Manhattan. I am creating an immersive experience at Elements Festival in Brooklyn on August 13th. That's one of the things I'm doing now. So like 10,000 electronic dance music fans are going to go to Elements Festival, and House World will have created an immersive performance in the margins that might suck you in and take you through our little journey.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. And a couple that attended House World last fall, they've hired us to create an immersive ritual within their theatrical wedding. So I'm working on that this August. And then there's a conference banquet sort of thing this October that I'm working out the details to, and I'm having a meeting about this Friday. But that's another way that we can kind of install House World in a new context, in a new space, and see how it works.
Fantastic. It's really great. Thank you so much for giving us so much of your time and talking about the work that you're doing. It really is fascinating and intriguing and really building these experiences. And I think increasingly you're absolutely right. It is about creating an experience for somebody, because so much of our life is through the internet and at a distance. So having these really personal, unique, and yet shared experiences really break through. And also the sense of play. I think that that's really a critical and interesting point that you brought up.
Definitely.
So are there any other people that you think I should be talking to about the way that people ought to be thinking about media, any media, and bringing the lessons and things that they've learned or the innovations they've made so that I can bring that to other people? I think one of the things is people get stuck in their silos and don't necessarily venture or look beyond their own narrow, you know, playgrounds. And so I like to try to cross-pollinate and bring new ideas to different players. And I'm wondering who else you think I should be talking to.
Sure. Well, I got into this movement through my friend Cesar Alvarez, who's a playwright in New York. He presented his play Futurity to New York last year, and he has a wonderful show called The Universe is a Small Hat, which will eventually return. It's a science fiction immersive experience. He has another immersive experience called The Eighth Palace, which I experienced a demo of a couple months ago. And he has a lot of great ideas about these experiences, immersive and more traditional plays like Futurity and like the Elementary Spacetime show, which he's presenting this fall in Philadelphia. So he's a great person to talk with.
Fantastic. It's really been so fascinating, and I can't wait to show up at one of these immersive experiences. It sounds really fun.
We'd love to have you at House World.
Yeah, so fun. Well, we've reached the end of our first episode of Up Next, and I'd like to close by thanking a few important people who've been indispensable to bringing this program to life. Of course, first and foremost, I'd like to thank today's guest, Andrew Hoffner, for doing such an incredible interview. Thank you also to my friend, voice artist, Rob Naughton. Our production team over at Microfame Media, thank you. And of course, most importantly, all of you, the members of our amazing audience, thank you. I'll be talking to you again next week, right here on Up Next.